This weekend, only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Gway Malkin Wayne Patreon channel. I'm Chad Anderson, your host. I'm here with my guests Philip and Quisty, and we're here to talk about Albert and LCD. I can be done now. Welcome to the baby talk episode.
Philip has left the conversation.
I was telling my husband Mike about this before, and he's like, oh no.
Yep.
I'm here to welcome my dear friends Philip and Christy, real life partners, real life friends. They like live down the road from me and we hang out sometimes. It's fun to hang out on this show. I apologize for the baby talk, although you're welcome to baby talk as much as you want tonight and tonight only. For guests who may not know you guys, tell everybody a little about yourselves, name and pronouns, where we might know you from, and I'd love to hear your early thoughts on what it was like to research Albert and LCD.
I'm Christy Porter. I use she, they pronouns. I'm a journalist and occasional comic book writer and cosplayer, and feel like, honestly, LCD is a trendsetter in early ooh-woo-woo talk. So that's kind of where I ended up.
And I'm Philip CV. I use he, they pronouns. I am a comic book artist and writer. I've been on the show a whole bunch of times, but I have been drawing a variety of X-Men comics for the last 2 years outside of other work I've done for companies like Image, Top Cow, Dark Horse, and the like. A lot of X-Men Infinity comics, but some additional X-Men The Wedding Special, Deadpool 7 Slaughters, things like that. And then, let's see, my thoughts on this one. No, like, I really enjoyed this. I read almost all their appearances for this, which I'm not always able to do on some of these Patreon bonus episodes, like when we did the Summers Family. I was like, I don't have time to read 700 comics. But something like this, it was fun to go back and read all of it and kind of look at their kind of growth and change over the times. I was aware of Albert because they made a, like, a robot Wolverine action figure in the 90s. And I remember seeing his image on covers with LCD. But honestly, outside of Dark X-Men, I was like, I don't know if I've read any of their appearances before this.
And Dark X-Men was delightful body horror comedy for the two of these. We will get to that in just a moment. Yep. We are approaching the first appearance of Wolverine on my show, which will launch just a couple weeks after this. I've actually already recorded the episode. Incredible content. I'm really excited about it. And I've never been a big Wolverine guy, but I've been giving a lot of thought to Wolverine in the last few months as I prep my research, especially as we get to the giant size portion of my show in the new year. Wolverine's really special. Like, there's something pretty magic about this character. There's a lot of types of Wolverine stories. And Larry Hama crafted a lot of types of Wolverine stories. Claremont crafted Wolverine into the main X-Men books and did a ton of stories with this character. But Larry is the one that really takes Wolverine on his kind of solo journey. And there's a lot of ways to tell a Wolverine story, just like there's a lot of ways to tell a Batman story. What are some of your favorite genres to see Wolverine mixed into?
I mean, anyone who's listened to any of the episodes I've done and or has talked to me in person, it would not surprise you that I tend to gravitate towards the Wolverine as dad stories, which is also my Cable as dad. I don't know, Chad, we'll have to talk about this as a therapist at some point. What this says about
nope, you're my friend. You don't get my therapy skills.
I'm totally kidding. Yeah, those are honestly some of my favorite things, and it shows up in these as well. But Wolverine, I love the juxtaposition between the gruff, angry, potentially murderous exterior, but also the one who looks out and watches over little kids. Wolverine and the X-Men, the run with Jason Aaron, is one of my favorite Wolverine stories of all time. Jason Aaron's probably my favorite Wolverine writer, but I know Larry Hama set the kind of groundwork to allow kind of the breadth of stuff that comes later on.
So I came on for like one of the Wolverine kind of flashbacks for your show previously, and basically that was my answer almost verbatim, is I love Wolverine as dad. So I guess maybe there is a reason that Philip and I are partners. But I really also like Wolverine when he is kind of put into the position, and this is a little vague and maybe not a specific genre, of seeing kind of himself reflected back at him and the things he doesn't like about himself. He's the best at what he does, but he also hates doing that thing. And I like seeing that kind of deep inherent tragedy in a person. I'm just a bad person, maybe.
Wolverine genre wise, you can have Patch in Madripoor, where it's like very noir detective kind of energy. You have Wolverine as the soldier, the Vietnam kind of veteran PTSD version, the guy who's like lost all his memories. Wolverine in body horror, Wolverine in hell, Wolverine in horror or monster comics. Wolverine's dad is really interesting. When we examine that as a trope, for example, have you guys seen The Last of Us, where we have very much the father-daughter awkward relationship?
But Wolverine energy.
Absolutely. But this goes all the way back in fiction to, you know, Batman and Robin, right? Like where you have the younger sidekick, Captain America and Bucky, Lone Wolf and Cub. Like there's a bajillion versions of this. But when we take the hardened soldier and put like the baby on his back, right? Cable with Hope Summers, that show Renegade, if you guys ever saw that, there's a billion versions of this in fiction. And there's something about that like reluctant, grumpy old man from Up having to team up with that like enthusiastic little Boy Scout kid again in Up, where you're like, oh, this is a fun, like odd couple energy. And Wolverine has that. Who's your favorite Wolverine sidekick? Like,
we're both gigantic Kitty Pryde stands.
But I got a second choice.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Wolverine and Kitty Pryde miniseries from the 80s is really excellent. Fantastic. Really enjoyed reading that just this last year for the first time. But I mean, I grew up reading and watching X-Men when it was Wolverine and Jubilee, which is kind of the next iteration of Kitty. And Kitty was kind of like Wolverine and Rogue had that relationship for a little bit too. So it's just kind of one thing after another. So probably Kitty, but I grew up around the Jubilee stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Kitty is definitely my go-to. 100%. She my girl. But I think if I have to kind of, you know, go to another story or go to another one, I really actually like Wolverine in armor and Astonishing X-Men.
Oh, yeah.
There's a few of these different versions where you can pair Wolverine up with different characters and get a different version of his story that comes out. And the dad mode only works so far, right? Like, he's tough on you. He's the guy that's going to hit you in the face. I think of like the Hound and Arya Stark from Game of Thrones with this kind of energy, where he like makes her this kick-ass like little assassin who can, you know, change your face and like just eat you up. Like there's this version of like the hardened soldier made from innocence. There's a lot of one-shots in this too. There's like that Claremont issue where he's got like Katie Power in the Power Pack down in like the Morlock tunnels where everybody's getting slaughtered, but he's making this little girl tough, you know, I got you. And there's like this there's like hardened love version of him that's really interesting. Now, when we are telling superhero stories, we like to find odd reflections of them, right? Iron Man, we get the guy in the bigger, stronger armor, or the guy that uses the armor for evil, or like you always want to play a version of him off of others. Wolverine, you can do with Omega Red or Sabretooth or Bloodscream or Cyber or Deadpool. And they're all kind of a different version of him. Or you have the kind of the antithesis where you can do a Wolverine Cyclops or Nightcrawler or Colossus like pairing. And it brings out different sides of this character in a different way. I'm always fascinated, and I've read enough fucking superhero comics at this point, when I see writers that will take that kind of idea of exploring a side of a character through a different lens and show us a unique way of viewing the main character. And Albert and LCD are that. People are fond of these characters and also very annoyed by them and see them as like super, super Z-list in some ways. But what are your thoughts on, before we talk about who they are, what are your thoughts on how these characters play off of the tropes we've been talking about with Wolverine?
Obviously, we've talked about sort of this, you know, dad element of Wolverine and his compulsion to see a possible sidekick protege thing to protect and go for it. And you see a lot of that in Albert with LCD, but I think even in sort of when we first meet Albert, he is kind of the dumb one, right? In the pairing of them. She refers to him as dummy. And I kind of feel like that's often the role that, you know, in some versions of Wolverine that we kind of see himself cast in is just, I'm just a simple guy with claws and there's one thing I'm good at. You just show me where to stick them kind of thing. And I think that that sort of like dynamic of, you know, this buddy cop and him just being sort of the gruff dumb guy, just point me in the right direction to stab. I think that was an interesting thing to sort of, you know, point out about Wolverine.
I think there's a side of him, especially with his past, where he's always cast as the weapon, be it Weapon X program or even working with Department H in Canada, or even probably X-Men stuff as well. Like, he's the bullet you throw, shoot at someone. He is the weapon you throw into a room. So Albert is very much, his initial job is to lure Wolverine out Basically in order to hurt him. So there's that kind of reflection there where Wolverine's job in some stories is just to be the thing that punches and fights, and Albert is very much similar kind of in his initial appearance.
Wolverine is a product of the Weapon X system. When we first meet him, he's a programmed soldier. Obviously, it takes time for them to develop the backstory a little bit. But there's the idea of he doesn't know who he is or where he comes from, and he's been programmed as a weapon in the way that, like, Laura Kinney is a reflection on Wolverine in a different kind of way. The programmed soldier who's trying to find her path. Albert is literally a programmed soldier with a healing factor in that you can blow him up and he's going to restock again. When we take this kind of robotic version of Wolverine, it's really interesting. We also love to create baby versions of our characters. Think of the X-Babies. Think of Storm being reverted to childhood and having her buddy comedy with Gambit as Rogue. You know, there's a lot of versions of this. LCD is a particularly obnoxious version of that. But when we look at LCD as the parallel of Jubilee, and then we look at the Albert LCD relationship and the parallel between the two of them on the other side, how does LCD reflect the worst parts of Jubilee?
She doesn't listen. It's very much that, like, if there is something that you want her to do, tell her you don't want her to do it, and she'll do it. Like, we see this moment with Elsie when she's in the sewers with Cable, and, you know, anybody who's trying to give her instruction of not to do something or to do something, she's like, I'm gonna do what I want. And I think Jubilee is very much the same way, of like just unable to let go of whatever she happens to be fixated on at the moment, whether it's Cable's gun in you know, LCD, or if it's like, where is Wolverine going in the middle of the night and I can't sleep because he left and wouldn't tell me where and what he was doing.
If we take LCD as a reflection, Jubilee is the child stuck in childhood. We can't let her age. Does a mall babe eat chili fries? You know, versus like, I'm going to blow you up. Like, LCD has kind of a Tweety Bird energy. She takes like the most obnoxious parts of Jubilee and like literally we reduce her to a blonde little like toy walking robot who has a speech impediment, and everyone thinks she's so cute, but she'll fucking blow you up if you let her. She's got like the giant guns and the knowledge of how to fuck you up. There's a toughness about her, and the parallel between her and Jubilee I think is really interesting. And then we parallel the Albert LCD relationship off of Wolverine and Jubilee, and we suddenly have a very interesting lens. Wolverine also sees heroes in the robot characters. So Albert and LCD also represent to me kind of a C-3PO R2-D2 kind of relationship. It's the buddy cyborg droid comedy where they're kind of your allies and they're only going to fuck you up if they're programmed to do so. I told you I actually found like a lot of charm and like insight in these characters. And before we even begin the discussion about their ridiculousness, I hope I'm kind of changing your opinion on them. I'm kind of fond of these two already. We've had a lot of conversations on my show about this, about like robots as like slave stories. If a robot develops sentient and discovers what they are, can they overcome their programming? And what type of quote unquote human do they choose to become? And how are they seen in society? So like humans versus robots is a very different parallel than humans versus mutants. But these two are created as tools by a particular madman. And then we see their journey ever since then.
Yeah, I don't dislike them as characters. I think I just found kind of their use in a story fairly one note. And as I was reading some of their most recent stuff, obviously I'd read Dark X-Men, but I went back and read that I, Wolverine miniseries, and that does something interesting and different with them that initially I didn't love, but I was like, okay, I can see what they're how they're trying to carve them out as something other than kind of the very, very sliver of a role that they were given. Because yeah, it's like 8 or 10 issues of Wolverine is pretty much the extent of them as characters doing anything other than, you know, occasionally cameoing later over the next 20 years. So.
And there's that thing where there's like 1,000 versions of Spider-Man now, and there's like a couple hundred versions of Wolverine. This is just one more of those guys, right? You build a team full of alternate Wolverines and you put Albert on it. Like that's kind of the space they occupy in some ways.
Yeah, I almost wish that in that X Death and X Lives of Wolverine,
they got Albert in somehow.
Albert would have showed up somehow because he would have been the foil to like Techno Wolverine from the future or something.
Or Christos Gage literally just wrote a team of like reality hopping alternate Wolverines from like reality to reality. Like Albert would have been a great fit.
He could have been like poor Albert. Ship. Yeah.
Saladin Ahmed also had that Exile series a few years ago where there was like that little cartoon Wolverine, like Lil Wolby. Yeah. Like who's the LCD version of Wolverine? there's the
Wait, that's not Gabby?
Nope, no, that was a different one. And Gabby has that like magic as well, of
I
course.
love Gabby. I don't mean to belittle Gabby's.
No, there's no belittling.
LCD.
Yeah, right. Gabby is my favorite LCD. That's what the shirt says.
So Claremont launched a 4-issue Wolverine limited series in the mid-80s. It was the first time we really had a breakout X-Men solo book, unless you count Beast and Amazing Adventures way back when. And in the late 80s, there was a new Wolverine series that was launched that went on for quite a long time. And there's basically kind of been a Wolverine comic ever since. So this is kind of the first example we see of like an X-Men character carrying their own franchise. Wolverine Volume 2, number 37 in 1991 is where we first get Larry Hama and Mark Silvestri, giving us the origins of Albert and LCD. Philip, I'm going to presume you're a pretty big Mark Silvestri fan.
Prior to this, Mark Silvestri, who started at Marvel in I think 1984 was his first Conan stuff. He eventually landed on Uncanny X-Men and had a fairly memorable run during like the Outback era with Chris Claremont, then moves over to Wolverine after this. What I really enjoyed about these first couple issues, kind of detailing the first adventures of Albert and LCD, is you definitely notice a shift in Mark's art where it kind of modernizes. Going into it with issue 37, there's like a heavier classic brushstroke style that Dan Green was inking him, similar to something like Joe Rubinstein. I believe he inked Frank Miller on the Wolverine miniseries. But anyway, it's like a thicker, brushier, kind of looser stuff, which is kind of the style that Mark had been doing. But within an issue or two, I saw a real artistic shift where Dan Green started inking closer to things like Scott Williams and Wilsh Portacio were doing at the time. Art to Bear as well, sharper lines, crisper crow quill rendering. Mark started picking up slight affectations from Jim Lee and even Todd McFarlane's cartooning. I noticed right away. I was like, that's a Todd styling right there. And Mark always looks like Mark, and Mark's incredible. But I started to notice just the shift in 80s Mark Silvestri into Image era Mark Silvestri in these issues alone. It shifts really big one issue, and it's like really, really cool to see Mark doing Mark, but picking up some of the aesthetic things that were happening at the time. And it really puts him in the position to where within a couple issues of this, he leaves Marvel entirely and then goes with Jim, and they do their kind of Homage Studios to begin with Cyberforce alongside Wildstorm before they split into Wildstorm and Top Cow. It was really, really cool to watch kind of that stylistic shift. And Mark just is an incredible artist, and I really, really like his stuff.
Also, nobody quite does like tattered, shredded clothing barely hanging on a chiseled frame quite like Mark Silvestri. And we get so much of that in this.
So let's talk about the visual for these characters, and then we'll talk about their history. Albert has a lot of kind of like Mad Max energy. He's kind of got like Wolverine from the Weapon X compound energy a little bit. Like there's skin kind of covering his mechanical components. He's got the claws, there's the weaponry inside. You know, like if you take his face plate off, it's just going to be like a robot face underneath. But there's kind of a striking visual that kind of captures a horror energy a little bit, which is why we're doing this in Halloween month, because these are kind of horror characters. LCD is like a little teeny robot girl in a pink dress with like blonde wig who has lots of like cartoony Dennis the Menace facial expressions. And the play of them is, again, if you take Wolverine and Jubilee, one of them is tall and scary, and the other one's just this like innocent kid who can also give you that like possessed by a demon energy and like exorcist head rotate around kind of thing, you know? Philip, would you enjoy drawing these two?
LCD is a challenge for most artists. And, you know, Mark Silvestri does an incredible job with her. And I think most of the artists drawing LCD, I was really impressed. Like, little kids are hard to draw. Their proportions are just slightly different enough that if you don't nail it, it looks like a small adult instead of a child. Albert makes sense because, you know, he's created by the Reavers. So he has very much a Reavers vibe, very similar to all the other characters there, where it's like the skin interacting with the circuits and metal and robotics. And yeah, I think I've drawn Albert a few times, actually, in flashbacks to Dark X-Men. In two different series, they've had me draw like a flashback or panel or two to Dark X-Men. So I've got a chance to draw a little bit of Albert, and he's really fun. I think at some point it'd be cool to see like a refresh look, because he's pretty much been rocking the same look since 1991, as has LCD. So.
Christy, are you a fan of the Reavers?
You know, they kind of got this, you know, like you were saying, sort of Mad Max post-apocalyptic vibe. You know, like it's an aesthetic, you know, it's a choice. It seems like a hostile work environment, I guess. You know, they're kind of
Weirdly, I've done a lot of episodes of this show. I don't think I've ever talked about the Reavers or Donald Donald Pierce on this show before, which is odd. So Donald Pierce is a character that is Guy Claremont when he introduces the Hellfire Club. Donald Pierce is one of those just like evil, you know, he dresses in robes and like spanks maids in the basement of the Hellfire Club. He's kind of a like a blonde trust fund baby energy. I wrote the profile on this guy. If you look at the Marvel appendix, that one is done by me. Donald Pierce has just kind of this like privileged, I do what I want kind of energy. And he's like a robotics genius. Did you guys ever see the Return to Oz film? It's like the really scary Tim Burton one with like Jack Pumpkinhead. And there's that scene where Dorothy gets like trapped by the Wheelers, those like really creepy guys who have like transformer wheels for legs and they're like running around with scary makeup on. Really frightened me as a kid. I hate, if you look up the Wheelies from the Return to Oz, they give me a lot of Reavers energy. So again, I started picking up the books in the mid 90s. The Reavers were characters I saw when I went back into the flashbacks. They weren't used very often, but it's very Mad Max. It's very, there's a guy's like head and torso that have been like grafted onto like tank treads, and Pretty Boy can extend wires from his fingernails and like program your mind, and Skull Buster and Bone Breaker, and like it's got this like very street gang energy. They're big foes of the X-Men through the Claremont writing. It's kind of a scarier parallel version of the Sentinels in a lot of ways. And Albert and LCD have their origins with these two. So Donald Pierce has the X-Men's old base in Australia. This is where they live in a while, in the Reavers base. And he is working with the Reavers, and we see him kind of slowly assembling a robot version of Wolverine with like LCD next to him. And we start this story, they're getting memory and logic circuits installed, but they get distracted by a time vortex. Wolverine has some crazy fucking stories. My least favorite Wolverine stories, I think, unless I re-examine, are the Landau, Luckman, and Lake stuff with Zoe Culloden. Woof, hate it. Although I kind of like Chimera, that like lady with the scary sock puppets. She's kind of fun. Anyway, Wolverine's battling Lady Deathstrike. There's a time vortex, and the circuits in the girl robot are accidentally set to maximum logic and rationality. So Donald Pierce's plans are twisted away by a cosmic fate of like these circuits just got reprogrammed. She was supposed to be programmed to be 5 years old, but instead she has the intelligence of like a very cynical adult. Lady Deathstrike sees the unfinished Wolverine robot, and she asks Pierce what it is, and he says, "Not a cyborg, totally synthetic, Molly Steel laminate exoskeleton. No human luggage like conscience or sense of self. This is pure killer. The killer construct is but the bait. The real killing will be carried out by this one. Cute, isn't she? I call her LCD." She's supposed to be a 5-year-old with like a bomb strapped to her that's gonna fucking blow Wolverine up, which is great. In 58, we see the cyborg Wolverine and LCD. By the way, LCD, if you take the letters L, C, and D, stand for liquid crystal display, which is like a thing used in computers. So it's a really fun play on words for this character, which makes me smile. The cyborg Wolverine and LCD begin robbing petty criminals, gathering cash. They've got like $300,000 saved up. Elsie's driving the getaway car, even though she's a little girl. They're in Venice, and she kind of just becomes your new favorite character on the page for just a minute. I'm going to ask your opinions on Baby Talk as we go forward, guys, because if you're reading dialogue, we're going to have to Baby Talk. Are you Baby Talk fans?
No.
No.
Like, if you ever, total sidebar, there's a movie called In a World starring Lake Bell. It's pretty fantastic as far as, she plays a voice actor, but like one of her side gigs is essentially teaching grown women how to not baby talk and to talk like adults. And I honestly think that would be a net public good if there were just somebody there obliterating baby talk from our society.
You know, we've talked a little bit on other episodes, but it's bringing a little bit further in. The three of us come from backgrounds in Mormonism, and there is this really, and Christy and I have talked a ton about this, but this really gross patriarchal aspect of Mormonism where they train all the women in the church to speak like your baby voice talking to a child. So you'll have 50, 60-year-old women in Mormonism, fairly high positions of power. Now, if you know anything about Mormonism, it is absolutely no power because they're very misogynistic. But these women who have quote-unquote power in the church will get up and then will talk like they're talking to a 5-year-old in baby voice. So I have like a visceral reaction where I'm like, you're so much smarter and more eloquent and studied. Why are you talking like this to a baby?
Yeah, there's like that kindergarten teacher voice, yeah. Right? Like it's exhausting. But there's also, you know, if you go back to like the Candy Southern Smut episode of my show, which is infamous for listeners, like Candy engages in a lot of like, good grief, it's daddy. It's like very Anne Margaret from the 60s, like energy. And you just kind of wince at it, right? night. And anytime you have a character that talks like this, it's super annoying.
Now,
Anyway.
Here's a question for you, Chad, because, you know, you as a writer as well. Where do you fall when it comes to writing characters with accents? Where do you fall about representing that in the actual dialogue? Do you feel you need to, like, phonetically spell out accents? Or can you pick out a couple words? Or can you just add an asterisk that's, like, said in a Cajun accent?
I'm actually a fan of it in the right genre and in the right time period. Go back to, like, Mark Twain writing, like, Huckleberry Finn, and there's a lot of this type of thing in it. I think there's a place in it in comics to a certain extent. With Rogue, you gotta have, or Rogue and Cannonball, you gotta have, like, A-H instead of I, right? Like, yeah. I gotta go over there, y'all, you know? I think there's a certain amount of it that can be really respectful and, like, reflect character essence a little bit, but I think it can be really overdone and very quickly borderline on offensive if you do it in the wrong places, right? So I think in 2024, if I'm writing character dialogue, I'll use a little bit of it. I'm gonna make Moira McTaggart go, oh, once in a while, but I'm not gonna spell your Y-U-I-R like they did in the 80s. Like, but for some characters, it's a gag, right? Like, this is LC's whole thing. If you're gonna write LCD, you're doing it because of the way she speaks. So as she's driving the car, Christy, will you give us LCD's first line of dialogue here?
Get out of my way, you stuff-wide vegetables. The stench of your cocoa butter is wank.
And someone tells her to just be happy, and she says,
Wetsy, you be happy driving a blown vet with a twaining blocks on the pedals.
Because of course she can't reach the pedals on her own. Already, it's a lot, but she's cute. I kind of like her. When I compared her to Tweety Bird, Christy, you had a reaction.
Because it's spot on. Like, it is a like, it's that very, like, ain't I a stinker? I have a much higher intelligence that I'm letting on. And when Granny's around, I am an innocent little Tweety Bird. But then when the cat's around, I'm a violent sociopathic killer.
Let me be very clear. I love a cute, violent character. Tweety Bird is my least favorite Looney Tune. Drives me up at the wall.
Is it the voice?
You know, I think, yeah, I really think it's the voice, if I'm honest. I think it really comes down to that, like, I don't know, it's like that little, I don't like him. I like LCD, but I don't like Tweety. I hear LCD in my head, but Tweety I have to hear out loud. It's a very different reaction. I think I hate baby talk. Nope, you convinced me. There's a little bit more of her dialogue where we get a lot of course not, you sawy dummy. We want them to twack us here. The more people who know where the whole point of him is to find us, she says. Moequio disculpation. Who is the, like, Mel Brooks movies? Who talks like this?
Oh, that's Blazing Saddles, right?
Is it Madeline Kahn?
Madeline Kahn's character, yeah.
She has I'm so tired. Which is a common speech impediment.
But she does it, like, emphasizes it heavy in that character. When she sings the song, I'm like, I'm tired of playing the game. And she's, like, all sexy on the stage, but, like, just, like, lazy dancing. Like, there's a lot of this in comedy. I don't know. Donald Pierce wants to make LCD a time bomb to destroy Wolverine, but her logic got upped. So she ends up, like, removing the scalp of the Albert robot and explains her plan. Philip, do you want to read this one?
Sure. She says, this is the supplies I was telling you about, dummy, but after I'm finished, I won't be able to call you dummy any longer. You're going to be a Wegerer Einstein. Remember all those stops we made at Radio Hut stores all over town? You'll notice that Elsie's dialogue is never consistent. She half the time can't say else, other half the time she can.
Okay, but if you wrote all over town, it wouldn't read very well at the... You would, like, stare at that on the page, like, what is she saying?
Like, a mouthful of marbles. Yeah. We also get words like W-E-G-U-W-A-R, which is Wegiwo, which is ridiculous.
There were times I stared at her dialogue and read it out loud multiple times, still could not figure out what word she was actually saying.
Well, and try being the writer writing it, right? Like, I tried writing some dialogue for this character. I'm like, oh, Steve Fox did this recently.
Control, find, L, replace with W.
So they've stopped at a bunch of radio stores. They've bought a bunch of equipment, and she's able to reprogram the Wolverine robot. I speed read all the computer manuals and memorized all the schematics. And when I finished, you're going to be turbocharged. All your logic and tactical capabilities will be boosted. So you might actually have a chance at defeating Wolverine. He's very fond of her. The robot says, thank you, LCD, for making it smarter. And then she names him Albert. I don't know where the name Albert comes from, except that she called him Einstein. So I think that's the entire reference. Yeah. I don't think there's any other Wolverine or robot
pun. She's been alive for, like, 2 hours. Like, her pool of references is whatever Pierce gave her, you know?
I'm going to give myself permission to not do baby talk constantly for this character. But she tells, when he thanks protects her, she tells him, I can't change my own programming, but there's nothing stopping me from changing your programming. And that way you can finish the detonation circuit within me. So there's this idea of robots find a way to break their programming because they have to complete a particular mission and they find the loophole, which is, again, a very common trope in these stories. And when Albert comes out of this, he realizes, I can feel things as well. So it's that little bit heart of the poet in their gruff robot warrior, you know? If anything happened to you, I would miss you. And she goes, oh, poor Albert. You never have to be alone ever again. I just gave you a modem. She pulls off her own head. She works on herself. Wakawi, my neural network is a direct radio linkage from my brain to major motor areas, allowing my head to function independently from my body. It's a lot, you guys. So she's able to reprogram her links so that they can stay in touch and be kind of like a connected, united pair. And it's really kind of adorable. It's C-3PO and R2-D2 in their own little way. Wolverine pulls up with some bikini babes in his car and Albert stalks
Penny
him.
Penny and Cindy, they have names.
Albert stalks him and attacks, but Wolverine like guts the robot and machine parts go spilling out of him, which is somehow very sad here. And he says,
help me, LCD, I'm damaged. There's a smell in my nostrils like burning circuits, and there's a taste in my mouth like rust. Is this what it is to die?
No, Albert, you have backup systems, but you have to go hide somewhere and repair yourself.
I can't leave you, LCD.
And she blows up the building behind her and says,
you have to warn, Albert. You have to save yourself. I can't override my primary directive any longer. I have to do what I was created to do.
And then she screams out the window for help so that Wolverine will run and save her. And in issue 39, Wolverine and Storm get close to saving LCD, but she blasts Storm away. You stupid Medwo, I don't need to be rescued by you. I need Wolverine to grab hold of me so I can fulfill my prime directive. So she can't break her own program. Gotta explode, she says, and reduce him to a fine red mist. That ought to keep that flying wave, flying weighty out of my hair. See, that's what you can't figure out the words sometimes.
Oh, flying lady. I got
flying
that,
lady. No. That flying weighty.
I can be your baby talk translator.
Thank you.
We need caption boxes for this episode.
I've read a lot of ooh-woo in my time on the internet, so.
Albert crawls to safety. He's damaged. He's fretting. He's thinking.
Everything was so much simpler before she opened up both and opened up both of us and improved us. Now I know too much. Now I feel too much.
And he yells, oh, Elsie, can you hear me? So some criminals named Jocko and Sally take him to a radio hut. He downloads a bunch of information so he can help LCD break her programming.
Like, I don't know, it's not that I want to overemphasize, but the amount of, like, throwaway random NPCs in this story, there's a charm to it, and there's also, like, we have so many other characters, why are we constantly diluting this story with other, like, is this racist? Like, characters where the way they're speaking always makes me go, like, I don't know if I'm...
What race do you think Jocko and Sally are?
I don't know, I mean, it's not appropriate to ask someone what race they are, Christy, so...
You're the one who called it racist!
I also think the hardest thing for me with these comics is the like caption boxes, the lettering comes across as so difficult for my eyes to track in a weird way. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Like, it's kind of muddied and there's like those yellow boxes with like just the scrolling words, like takes a lot of focus. I don't know. So Wolverine pushes through the flames. He saves LCD, who begins crying because she's going to blow up and harm this man. And he really cares about her. And she uses all of her concentration to stop from exploding. And she tells Wolverine the truth about them. It was shocked that he decides to help them even though they are robots, because he realizes there's something human within there. These guys feel things, and I can tell. Her countdown initiates. Wolverine stays with her even as Storm states that Elsie was a thing. She doesn't deserve to be saved, which is kind of a harsh view from Storm. Albert ends up saving LCD in time, but then they get gunned down by the police, or Albert does. So issue 40, we get some police violence there. Issue 40, Wolverine and Storm take LCD to Forge at the X-Mansion. He determines that her explosives were on hold and cannot be removed. Anything could set them off. It's like that landmine or that bomb that never exploded. At a dinner, there's a scene between Jubilee, who's jealous of LCD. LCD's drinking motor oil through a straw. She's plugged into an outlet to recharge.
Like, I almost have to pause there because Forge is like, anything could cause her to blow up, and she's got like so much, what does she have, C12 in her or something?
Smash cut to a diner.
Let's take her to a diner with a bunch of people, and they're like feeding her motor oil at the table. table, and the waitress is like, well, that's sweet, honey. Like, I just, logically, none of it tracks. I was like, so why?
You got hung up choice? On how the consistency of, like, the baby talk, like, it wasn't every L that was a W, and it wasn't every R that was a W or whatever. I got held up on the fact that she's full of, like, I think they said C13, okay, and they said it was, like, 5 times more powerful than C4. And I was like, if it's C13, it's only, like, 3 times more powerful than C4.
It's like, she can blow up at any time. Let's take her around a bunch of people in a diner. I was like, what?
And have her drink motor oil and plug her into the wall. Ridiculous.
Hey, your editor's supposed to be like, this doesn't make any sense. Do a rewrite.
Figuring out my trajectories, Dwayne's my batteries, like crazy. She rides on the back of Wolverine's motorcycle. Radio reception should be excellent from up here. At the police station, Albert repairs himself, and now he's like even more cybernetic. And this is where his little speech impediment starts. He starts saying the sound bzzzt in between all of his speech bubbles. What were your thoughts on Albert getting gunned down by the police? I mean, he's like an assassin robot. You kind of get it, but also they didn't have to draw their fucking guns.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the LAPD in the 90s. It's, you know, is it someone who's different than me? Let's shoot them. So.
Yeah, I forgot that was in LA.
Yeah, it's LA.
There's a level of poignancy there that I don't know how much of it was intentional by Larry Hama, but now that's kind of sitting with me a little bit. Like, I mean, it's also the feds, to be fair. The FBI are also the ones who showed up because he had just hacked this Homeland Security or something. Yeah. So the feds show up and it's this whole like showdown. Honestly, one of my favorite moments is when like all of the news crews are around Wolverine and LCD, and then they're like, there's a standoff with the FBI. We got to go over there and go across town instead. And as somebody who worked in TV news journalism for almost a decade, I'm like, accurate. Yeah.
I love that every time they need to solve a technical problem, they go to Radio Shack.
And Radio Hut.
Somehow Radio Hut, quotation marks, has the technological ability to hack into the Pentagon.
I mean, where else are you going to go?
It's 91. Who knows how computers work?
True story. It's 2008, and I'm in a small Utah town that I won't name, and I'm working on my documentary. And we have our movie camera, but one of the like drives needs to be replaced. Like, we need another drive for more footage, basically. And the only place in town, there's two places we can go. So a local gives us advice. There's a local computer repair shop you can try. So we go there, and it's a man's house. And on the front of the house, it just says computer repair, but computer is spelled wrong. Like, computer repair. The other option, this man didn't have anything, was to go down to like Ben Franklin kind of store where it's all crafty, but it used to be a Radio Shack, and they had one section of shelves in the back that still contained Radio Shack equipment. And that's where we found the cord that we needed.
They had just hacked into the Pentagon and then built a Hadron Collider or something, whatever she builds.
There's my Radio Shack story.
At one point, they build a particle accelerator. Yeah.
This weekend, only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Oh, yeah.
Just for fun.
So Albert finds Wolverine and LCD. Wolverine's ready to attack again. He wants to save the little girl, but attack the mean robot. And Albert, like, takes time to, like, put him in place. I may be a bzzzt construct, but I feel things. I fear the bzzzt ending of my existence. I hate bzzzt you for being so biochemically active when my consciousness is nothing but circuits and data banks. I love bzzzt LCD. This is all bzzzt for her. Elsie can't be bzzzt free of her program bzzzt until you're dead. I bzzzt felt something else as I flew across the bzzzt country. A profound exaltation, a cataclysmic ecstasy. I was free, bzzzt, like a bird. That's what I want for bzzzt Elsie. I had to bzzzt trick her into bringing you to a high place, but now bzzzt, I can make her free too. More than bzzzt that, I have been bzzzt reborn in many ways. I am bzzzt stronger and faster and bzzzt bulletproof. What are your thoughts on this soliloquy?
Jesus, when you read
Shakespeare.
That, yeah,
Shakespeare.
I mean Shakespeare, obviously. Yeah. But also when you read it out loud, I think we were talking offline, I was like, you know, I from the type of writing that I do and the type of writers that I like, I mean, from from comics I trace back to Brian Bendis, talked about David Mamet. I look at all these, you know, Aaron Sorkin writers who have like a really interesting and unique approach to dialogue, but dialogue that also all so many of my favorite writers have been like, when you write dialogue, say it out loud, because it needs to sound like a human says it, and you need to be able to hear it because then it reads better. So when I read this, it's rough, but hearing you say it out loud, it's like, Jesus Christ, like,
shut the fuck up, Chad. I'm gonna punch
I'm gonna go back in time and punch Larry Hama. I'm kidding.
You don't have to go back in time. Just wait till this weekend.
Which one is worse, the baby talk or the buzzed?
Man, that's like Sophie's choice.
So, like, for me, reading the baby talk is pretty easy. But once again, I think that is just a generational. Yeah. I was online during peak Uwu Tumblr era. And I can read through it. I hate it. And I can translate it no problem, almost on the fly. Like, I did not struggle with anything she was trying to say. The boost to me is just like, it interrupts the sentence in a way where I have just enough time to get distracted and forget what was going on and what you were saying.
And I can like read through the boost really fast. But when you're saying it out loud or I'm trying to like get the gist of what's happening, it's very disruptive. Like once or twice in an entire speech, perfect. We get the gist. But every three words, it's like,
there was like 16 in that speech I just read. Yeah. So Albert is the thinking, feeling robot. LCD is trying to overcome her own programming. They're imprinted on each other. It's kind of like that thing where like the baby egg hatches and whoever he looks at becomes his mother. Like Albert has this relationship with LCD forever now. And that's my favorite part about them. They're also like full supporting characters in like several issues of Wolverine. Like it goes on for this saga lasts a while. There's a bunch of other crazy stuff happening we're just not talking about. They get attacked by military fighter jets after they are reunited. We jump to Wolverine 41 through 43. In the explosion, Albert is believed lost, and LCD drags Logan, who was not breathing, to safety in some sewer tunnels. Wolverine fights Sabretooth. LCD meets Cable and asks him for help. So she's met Forge, Jubilee, Cable, like
Storm. Yeah.
Storm. Oh, she did not like Storm very much.
But Storm didn't like her.
She like pops her own head off to throw it at someone in combat. She does it again later when Wolverine's been caught in a death trap, and then she detonates her own headless body to destroy the trap and save Wolverine. So there's an act of heroism in that she went out of her way to help someone else again, and now she's just a talking baby girl head, which is somehow even worse. But what are your thoughts on LCD's act of heroism here?
You know, from the time she finds a way to prevent her programming from detonating her explosives to save Wolverine, through this whole period, I really, really like the fact that she kind of gains a greater sense of the people around her. Obviously her connection to Albert from like imprinting on him, but like she genuinely cares about Wolverine and wants to help him and wants to protect him because he showed her kindness and affection and love like no one ever had or no one she had anticipated would. So I really do like that about her, and I really like kind of that drive and focus that LCD has. Yeah, even as they're just like these random tag-alongs and all the adventures for so many issues, like LCD is always, we want to keep Logan safe and help him out any way we can, and obviously Albert's like, yeah, whatever LCD does, I'll do it. Sure.
The sentient robot thing is always interesting, and it's a huge part of every X-Men story. Just a few issues after this, Larry Hama gives us the character Shiva, who's like a self-replicating, adapting Weapon X like robot who's sent to hunt down Sabretooth and Wolverine. Like Hama's playing a lot with this, just like Claremont is with like Nimrod and the Sentinels and other characters in the main X-Men. Wolverine grabs LCD's head. He vows to get her a new body. Christy, will you read us LC's speech here?
It's too late, Wogan. I'm wanting on Exuoi. Battlewee's white now. My main power was in my torso along with my recharges. When my batteries run down in a matter of minutes, all of my memory, everything that makes me me, is going to crash. But I'm not afraid of crashing anymore. It's not so bad once you've had a real friend.
You guys are going to hang up from this call and Christy's going to be stuck.
I'm going to be stuck.
You have to find like a hard reboot here.
Oh no. Yeah, put me down in front of like Peaky Blinders or something, you know, just a radically different accent.
Sabretooth attacks. LCD's head bites his neck. They both fall out of the plane. Albert then finds her head underwater and powers her back up, and they're cute. In 43, Albert fights with some Morlocks. He needs a power charger for LCD so he can save her. 45 and 46, we're in the Morlock tunnels, and Albert's building her a new body. I'm not going to, I'll do one line of buzz. Just you wait and see, LCD, you're going to have a fine new body that's 10 times buzz better than the one Pierce built for you. Okay, you get the idea. We're not going to keep doing the buzz. So she
your next like read through episode you need to do is an all Albert and LCD. Get Justin to do Albert, get Alicia to do LCD, and just go to town.
Oh, Alicia would hate the baby talk so much.
I'll come
Justin would be
back. I'll do
delighted.
it.
Justin would just like cackle the whole time at her. Like that, he enjoys inflicting pain upon her in that way. I love them very much. I get to hang out with them in a couple of days. I'm very excited. I'm
That's
going
awesome.
to
Get to tell
Minneapolis.
him we said hi.
So Albert has been powered up by LCD. He now powers her up. He gives her auxiliary data banks, high amperage, linear drive motors, third generation passive night vision. She says that it takes too much power. It's going to drain my batteries. There's not enough to fit inside my whittle frame. But he cuts off the power of a section of the city and diverts it toward LC and then builds a whole particle accelerator to work on her to power her up. This is maybe my favorite. I love
All from the Radio Shack.
Radio Hut.
Radio Hut. Could be from the stealth bomber he stole
That
from the
is, oh, but
military.
that does make a comeback later too,
It does,
which
yeah.
with a number of upgrades, I think Elsie refers to it, they've been Albertized.
When she comes back in 51 through 53, she has been upgraded. They have used some components from Spiral's body shop. Spiral's the six-arm Mojoverse lady who has like a weird plastic surgery clinic in another dimension. Don't worry about it. She also, maybe her weirdest speech impediment thing, she calls her creator Mr. Pierf. Like she doesn't use the TH sound anywhere else, but here it's duplicated the electronics that Mr. Pierf designed in the blueprint. It's like a completely different. I don't like it.
It's like it's just to disrespect him personally.
Do you guys know the character Hunter in Darkness?
We were talking about this because it's referenced a whole bunch, and turns out it was a character that was introduced early on in the run, but it was not something I was familiar with.
No, but I do love the idea of, terrifying android dad, terrifying android daughter bomb, and their pet, Hunter in Darkness.
Terrifying
Hunter
ping
in
pong.
Darkness first shows up in another Hama issue in Wolverine 34. And again, it's another parallel of Wolverine. It's like a savage creature in the woods that, if you treat it right, will be your friend. But if you don't, it will fucking rip you to pieces. He has a bunch of appearances in some Hama comics. I think his last time showing up was like Wolverine 86 in like 1994. But they befriend this guy. LCD calls him Puppy. Albert builds a tunnel and repairs a stealth bomber, and they fly off in their ship and they pull into the Cloud Nine Motel because they picked up some strange vibes from the new spiral built sensors in LCD's body. Even Puppy was reacting. They just fly away. They go to a graveyard. There's a skeleton with some adamantium claws that's part of a big crazy Wolverine story that we're not going to get into. Mystique is here. Spiral is here. Back off, you tawdwee twawups. The resolution of this story involves time travel, alternate reality. Realities, Mojo, something called some plasma wraiths, and weirdly, that Jubilee at the end of time that we got to see at X-Men 97 very recently. So I don't know if you guys have thoughts on this story. It goes all over the place, and we're just not gonna.
There's so many things happening at once. As I was like reading this, I was like, do these plot lines at any point converge? We have this thing with Jubilee, this like Albert and LCD thing happening with Bloodstream, and this other thing happening with Spiral and Mystique and Wolverine. And then at one point, eventually they do kind of come together, but it is a lot.
And don't forget the plasma wraiths.
Oh, and of course, the plasma wraiths that are of indeterminate power set. Yes.
The thing that I think really kind of sucks here is that in this storyline, Albert, LCD, and Bloodscream find like a pile of bones in the Canadian woods, and they're a couple hundred years old, and one of them is Wolverine's skeleton. And they're like, oh no, something happened where, Wolverine is killed hundreds of years ago. We need to go back in time and we need to save Wolverine. So it's continuing on that thread of them trying to keep Logan safe, which I love it when characters try to keep Logan safe because, he's the best at what he does, but also he needs all the people around him, and that's a great thing about Wolverine. So, they somehow end up back in time. It's through Spiral and that time thing. And then it's like nothing for 30 issues. And it's like, what? And even when they pop back up, and we'll talk about this here in the 80s issues, like the editor's note is like they're referencing something, and the editor's like, don't worry, you haven't missed anything. We haven't told that tale yet. And then later the editor's note is like, I don't know, maybe we'll find out someday. And we never really get that story other than this like really bad exposition flashback. And it was like, did we run out of time? Did we forget that was a thing until a couple of years later? And it was like, oh, how do we resolve this really quick? Like, it's a really cool setup that never really gets paid off, unfortunately.
The plasma wraiths are Larry Hama characters. The basic plot line is Mojo is futzing with like energy from the end of time, like when the universe crunches, and he contains that energy in like humanoid-shaped leather wrapping. things, and these characters can access other dimensions. And he carries these characters with him. They're in Wolverine for a couple issues. Several years later, he's writing that series, Venom, Tooth, and Claw, where these guys show up with, like, Dirt Nap, who's that, like, rat with the smiley face on his back that could, like, eat you and take your powers. And, like, Chimera, who's the lady in leather that, like, creates energy sock puppet dragons. Then Hama comes on to, like, Generation X for, like, an 8-issue stint and brings these characters back with him again. And I hate it every time.
It's like Fabian always bringing the Black Womb into everything he does, but like that's a better story.
I mean, I could never see a Plasma Wraith again and I would be justified.
One of the things I noticed about like the X-Men 97 show was like, oh, it feels like you condense so many sprawling comic book plot lines into like a single 25-minute episode, you know, from like Madeline Pryor and all these other stories. This one I actually feel like with the Mojo Verse and Jubilee and Old Jubilee, they maybe did more in the show with that than this did.
The first 30 issues of Gen X are pretty solid, and then we get that weird Hama run where they're jumping through time, and then Jay Ferber, and I've befriended Jay Ferber takes over and like does a bunch of odd things with the characters. The editorial like kept making changes, like the book just never got its magic back, but it still went on for like 7 more years, you know. Okay, we're gonna jump to Wolverine 82 to 84, new era of the book. It's a little bit later. We have the character Bloodscream here. We got to do a Bloodscream recently in a script reading on my show. Bloodscream is like Captain Jack Sparrow, but like as an albino pirate. that's all you need for this guy. He's like this really cartoony, horrific, like pirate vampire. Do you guys like Bloodscream? Is this a character you enjoy?
I knew the character visually, again, from this era, because around this time I was collecting a lot of X-Men comics. So I'm like, I knew who he was as far as what he looked like, but I honestly knew nothing about him.
But Wolverine has his own rogues gallery, Bloodscream and Roughhouse, man. They're always in Madripoor. He's this creepy pirate.
And that fifth Ninja Turtle that they mentioned early on in this run, who I decided would be Sandro, as in Sandro Botticelli.
Maybe it's one of the Plasma Wraiths. We don't know. Bloodscream finds the inert form of LCD in the woods and reboots her. And she's been inert for 300 years. And she rushes to find Albert buried nearby. And this is where she admits she named him after Albert Einstein. And this is where they like get lost in time. But then they ended up like getting buried in the woods. So they had this like whole set of adventures. And now they're like reactivated in the present. And Bloodscream's like, I'm a mutant, but also I'm a vampire. And then some poachers attack, and then they fight the poachers, and then like they agree to help Bloodscream find Wolverine, and like Hunter in Darkness is nearby, and she, I don't know, there's a lot going on here, you guys. It's a really intense amount of information for 50 issues later. They look for Logan in the past, they turn themselves off to conserve their batteries, and now it's 300 years later, and they've found their discarded stealth bomber, and they go to abandoned Muir Island, and they're like telling Bloodscream about the time they lived among the Siksika tribe in the past, where they'd met Wolverine and a forge from an alternate timeline, and they fought the Mankiller Wolf, who's an agent of the adversary, and then they go find Wolverine, and this plotline is literally never resolved. They just like fly off and they're like, we'll go find our friend, and then they never do, and that's fucking fine, because good lord, I love time travel stories, but this is so much, y'all. It's a lot.
Well, the issue even jumps ahead to the future where this Wolverine and Forge are, and Albert and LCD are in that future, even though they just made a point of saying that future was changed and never happened, and then again, never picked up again.
Also, we had made a point earlier that, like, if you go to the future and come back, you can't remember memories of the future was a very specific plot point, but I guess apparently not.
It's so rough to read some of this. It's pirates, time travel, robots, like there's just too much going on, and then they just kind of fly away. I really just like it. When Hama is on Gen X, he brings these characters in for like one page in one appearance during his Bianca Lanige storyline. Are you guys familiar with Bianca Lanige? There's a story, it lasts for like 5 or 6 issues, where Bianca is a mutate who has like a company. She has like this power of transmutation that allows her to change 7 aliens into her like 7 dwarves, and it goes weird. The Hama stories in Gen X are I'm a Hama fan, I really am, but there's some of this stuff that I'm like, god damn, stop. Please. It's so
he
much.
feels like a very widely read,
Yes,
you
but
know?
like we don't have to
And
do everything in every issue.
yeah, like he wants, he's like, oh man, I was reading this week about, you know, radio huts. So that's every issue now.
So these characters then kind of enter the list of like obscure 90s characters that never really get brought back except for once in a while. They show up in a couple of random places, but it's not really up until 2018 that they get any sort of prominent feature. So in the Weapon Lost series, this is when Charles Soule is writing Wolverine Forever. Wolverine loses his healing factor and he like has a bunch of variants and there's a bunch of craziness and there's all these like breakout titles. Like it goes on and on and on. Death of Wolverine and Hunt for Wolverine. There's all these limited series and some of them are actually quite good. There's
Well, the
different
Tom
creative
Taylor one is
teams.
fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like Inhuman shit mixed in and like some really weird character beats for people like Cypher and Psylocke gets her body back and like Sapphire Styx. And like there's a whole bunch of craziness going through all of this. I like Charles Soule as a writer a lot, but this event just drug on. And it leads to like a whole like 30 issue series called Wolverines, which is like all of the Wolverine characters teaming up together. It feels like so much oversaturation, you know? And this is that era where a lot of people were very tired of the books. This is right before Krakoa, though. In Hunt for Wolverine, Weapon Lost, Albert is described in this series as part flesh, part machine, and the flesh part is being a clone of Wolverine. So he's had some sort of weird upgrade where now he's like cloned cells mixed with tech, at least for this one appearance. And he's gone dark, and it has not really stated why. An LCD's gone missing, and Albert's a little bit crazy, and he is like harming people and killing people looking for her, and everyone's looking for Wolverine. So, like, let's go look at the Claw murders, but it's really Albert. He hacks Cypher's throat in this. In this series, Cypher's like addicted to the internet and they're like detoxing him because all the information from the internet has made him crazy. An Inhumans character named Frank McGee is here. Daredevil's here. Misty Knight is here. Eventually, like Albert is apprehended, but he's like, what the fuck did you do with my kid? Like he's calling LCD his child now. Then we get the Robot Revolution stories that were happening by like Dan Slott in like the Iron Man 2020. It's like robots fighting for equal rights. And we see Albert briefly in a society living among these guys. And then he gets his own breakout series. So tell us about the 2020 I Wolverine series.
Yeah, so I mean, in all the craziness that was 2020, I entirely missed this series and this event. I was like, what the hell is this? When I was reading it today.
It's Larry Hama again.
It's Larry Hama coming back and bringing his creations back, which is actually really kind of fun. But it's interesting, somewhere around Hunt for Wolverine, when an Albert finally comes back, I feel like the dynamic and who Albert and LCD are shifts and changes. Whereas before they were like, you know, a family, but they were there to help Wolverine. They weren't just like these disparate killing machines. I don't think Albert had really killed anyone up to this point. But from Hunt for Wolverine on, every story is Albert just hacking and slashing the shit out of everyone. And it feels so incongruous. And so inhuman, dehuman, compared to the previous iteration of the character. Now, I don't say that as a point of criticism, because sometimes it's important to evolve a character to where they are a little bit more sharper and recognizable. Like, this is Albert's shtick now. When you put Albert in a story, he's gonna hack and slash everyone to get to LCD. So in I, Wolverine, let's see, Donald Pierce has become part of the Hominis Verendi. This takes place in Madripoor.
Hominis Verendi are like those little kid Hellfire Club kids that like are super awful and now they've formed a new like anti-mutant group on Madripoor.
Yep. And they were introduced in Wolverine and the X-Men that I previously mentioned, and I love. And
Yeah.
it's fun because Farrell and Marrow's story I did with Zach Thompson in X-Men Infinity picked up a lot of this stuff in Madripoor, same character, so it was real
Oh my
fun.
God, LCD versus Wilhelmina Kensington. Woof.
Oh, that'd be so much fun. I'm still honestly reading this, like, I got so many ideas that I'm just keeping in my back pocket to hopefully.
Wilhelmina Kensington is that little girl in Hominis Verendi or the Hellfire Club who looks like LCD,
Yeah,
but
they
like
are very, very
she
similar.
likes dissecting rare animals and like putting their blood all over her and like talks like a baby. Yeah.
This one, LCD's been acquired by Pierce again, and Albert wants her back. In the Princess Bar, Albert meets Tiger Tiger before they are attacked by government agents, and Albert brutally kills them in self-defense. Albert then seeks out Pierce at the Reavers. Rogers Universal Robotics.
Which is RUR, which is like a robot pun because it's that play that initially like introduced robots. Go look up RUR sometime. It's
okay, yeah, I like that. Albert confronts him. Pierce lets him know LCD had been broken into parts and kind of sold off to different criminal factions in Madripoor. Her head was sold to Kimura, her arms to Jade Dragon Triad, and her legs to the Vladivostok Mafia. So different parts of LCD were used for different criminal activities, and Albert helped gather them all, reassembles LCD in more of a schoolgirl's dress. She commented on looking very anime instead of her classic pink dress. And then on their way out of town, they just kill the shit out of everyone. And it's almost at this point, LCD has become like Hit Girl in Kick-Ass, where she's like this little teeny kid who just mercilessly, she has a chainsaw at some point. Like Albert throws
her at a
bunch of
people.
Honestly,
it is kind of Laura Kinney vibes.
Very Laura Kinney, yeah. So it's again, it's a very different tonal shift from who she's been, but at the same time makes both of them very like, I can describe them in one note type thing, which sometimes can be very helpful to reintroduce a character, and they're fun. Like them killing everyone is kind of a fun story, even though I'm like, this doesn't feel like all the stuff I read, you know.
A family that kills together, you know.
To state this a little bit more directly to everyone, 4 years ago, Albert and LCD had a two-issue limited series written by Larry Hama called 2020 I, Wolverine. And I'm guessing a lot of you didn't realize that it was happening. Philip, I wanted to ask you, what did you think of Roland Bashi's pencils?
Roland Bashi, I think I've seen their work in some Vertigo-esque stuff before this. And I think they are the right artist for like a crime, kind of gritty noir stuff. I don't know if the coloring and Roland's pencils and inks kind of work together. The coloring was a little bit more mainstream. I don't remember who colored it. And it wasn't bad. It was just one of those, Roland stuff is very like flat and graphic. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Jock's stuff, a la like the Losers book that he did with Andy Diggle. But the coloring is a little bit more like rendered, traditional big two superhero type stuff. So I felt like they were fighting each other a little bit. The coloring was trying to make it look more dimensional and rendered versus Roland stuff, which is a little bit flatter and more kind of abstract in its approach. So it's stuff that I'm like, man, I'd love to see that with like a flatter coloring on like a really gritty crime book. I think that would just really sing very well.
Yeah, he's done a surprising amount of Marvel work. I mean, not, you know, like maybe 6 or 7 dozen. I think a lot of Ghost Rider and Punisher stuff, but he's done a lot of like Wolverine and the X-Men. I also did that Karnak book a few years back, which I actually really loved. I think his work on that is great. Okay, we love Steve Fox, all of us, I know. Christy, tell us about Dark X-Men.
I guess the good news is, once again, like all of LCD's body parts, disparately head, torso, legs, are all in the same place again. The bad news is they're in the hands of Orcus, which is the robot supremacy organization that emerges as kind of the big bad out of the Krakoa era. They basically, through, you know, multiple campaigns, whether militaristic, violent, terroristic, and or PR, tried to, you know, make people hate the X-Men and or kill the X-Men and become the thing that humanity trusts and distrusts. Mutants. Anyway, so, you know, the fact that they have, you know, these robots now is kind of scary. But I mean, they end up using Albert to, he ends up under the control of Orcus, impales Archangel, slashes Havoc's throat, and, you know.
Like, remember how Havoc was a zombie? That's because this, that's
because Albert. Because Albert. Albert made Havoc a zombie. That was a big deal. Things have happened since then.
It's okay. I made him not a zombie.
Oh, yeah. That's the okay part. Yep. Like, I don't go too off track here, because I will talk about Madeline Pryor and Havoc for like way too long. But yeah, essentially, you know, the whole plot line where, you know, Madeline and Havoc are back together comes basically from this fact that Havoc is now a zombie raised by Madeline after Havoc is by Albert.
Madeline like blasts Albert into like bits, right?
Yeah,
like
an
energy explosion.
Yeah. And you know, Zero is kind of able to take the broken Albert back to Hellfire Embassy and do this weird bio mesh.
We have to talk about Zero for just a minute. Zero is a character who the X-Men have like been an endangered species, mutants and endangered species after the House of M. And Hope Summers is born, and there's like a whole bunch of crazy shit with the Phoenix. There's finally a moment where like 5 new mutants are born, but they're like are activated. They're the only ones. They call them the 5 Lights. They're explored in the Generation Hope series. And the worst one of them is the character Zero, who can create like weird, gross art. He kind of just looks like a serial killer's body display left for cops like all the time. He's dripping in flesh and like performance artist, like Japanese character. He's really gross to look at, and he has like some really wild stories, this character. I don't know if you guys are Zero fans.
He's very like, ugh. He's very Tetsuo from Akira. Like, that's who he's supposed to look like. That's what he looks like all the time, and like gross, fleshy tendril type stuff.
Yeah, there's a body horror element, which, you know, Dark X-Men feels like a perfect place for a lot of these people to land, including, you know, LCD and Albert, you know, in this like sort of misfits, cast off, living in the embassy to Limbo.
Yeah, Zero acquires Albert and was like, ooh, yes. Look at this.
And like, they kind of walk around with like their head like coming out of like Albert's shoulder. It's a very like meat puppet situation that I don't like love totally, but I guess I'm happy.
Steve creates two new Orcus agents for this series. One of them is Agent Krull, who's like known for torturing AI. Like, I'm going to program something to suffer and then torture it. And then there's a character named Agent Valens, who's like literally made a deal with the devil. And there's a bunch of really creepy shit with these guys. And there's an evil Madeline Pryor from another dimension. Anyway, they've got LCD. She's yelling at them. When Albo shakes off your nasty wee programming, he's going to whip you whim from whim. And that's the last baby talk we need to do.
Yeah, I mean, but correct me if I'm wrong, like, even after, you know, Madeline kind of blasts Albert apart and Zero's got the biomesh situation, they essentially have like a black box inside of Albert where Orcus is like watching everything that's going on inside the Limbo embassy through like, you know, Albert's little red eye.
Albert's Orcus head gets like grafted onto Zero's body, and Zero's like, I can call myself Zero Vereen or Wolver Zero.
Wolver Zero.
They have to fight a Banff dragon. Okay, so this is a Madeline Pryor from another dimension who went like super demon and like mutated Nightcrawler into a dragon. And the Banff dragon, like, these characters still exist in the Marvel universe. Like, there's a Nightcrawler dragon out there to be used, like, for anyone who wants to pick him up.
He's at the embassy right now, just eating out of the bowl.
LCD also gets turned into like a really gross gun in this series, and it's a odd visual.
I'm gonna text Steve about that.
Yeah, body, like I said, body horror. It's a really great place. I mean, LCD would be the first one to be like, oh, I just need my head. I don't need my body. I mean, she does it all the time. So the fact that she's reshaped into other things kind of fits, but it also means that they fit in this very gross side of like the X-Men universe.
There's a lot of characters in this series. In the end, basically, Albert and LCD get their bodies back and they go off to have their own adventures again. So thank you, Steve Fox, for giving them a happy ending. And they're back together as they deserve. And bodies. They have bodies again, which is an important thing. As we're like kind of wrapping up our conversation or kind of forming final thoughts, what are the stories with these characters that work for you guys? And what are the ones you're like, nope, I don't want to see that ever again?
I mean, we get a little bit of in some of the Larry Hama Wolverine stuff, where when we introduce LCD in particular to the X-Men, you know, for the most part, like, aside from Logan, aside from Wolverine, it's this like it, not she, they're not a person, she's not real, like, it's an it, right? This is a construct, it doesn't have sentience. And I think that's always like an interesting thing that pops up when you have these like AI robot stories. And I really do think Wolverine being who he is and all of his inclinations and compulsions, the fact that it is a little girl means he's automatically going to latch on to this. But I always think it's really interesting when it's mutants in particular that are denying humanity of another group when they have obvious sentience and emotion. I think that's sort of an ironic play that I think is, I wish were actually explored a little bit more with these two, because as bit players, they come in and out and some of their stories don't really fit with that idea. And I think I would have really liked to see a story where mutants accepting the humanity of these like otherwise like helpful, quirky, occasionally destructive, but mostly like mean well robot pair against, you know, their own preconceived notions of who gets to be human.
I do not enjoy all the madness that they get lost in. But when we look at the early parts of what Hama was doing, Pierce programs them to be a particular way. They break their programming. And I like the pieces of them that are like, I think, I feel, I'm experiencing the universe. It's very Wall-E in that way, right? And then we get the body horror shit. We get the little girl like blasted into pieces and used as weapons. But what Pierce initially programmed them to do was like, Wolverine will fight this robot that looks like him and then try to rescue the little girl. And that's immediately what happens. Wolverine hacks one and then tries to rescue the little girl. little girl. So you like it's like a very fair read of Wolverine's character. I like these two in kind of a like, you know, you bring them in once in a while to have a little adventure, but I don't know that I necessarily need to see the hacking apart crazy like time travel shit anymore.
When and if we see them again, it would be nice to be handled by a team that recognizes both the recent stories and then the original ones and kind of restores a little bit of their humanity and goals outside of protect each other, kill everyone else. Because that's fun. Like the little teeny hit girl robot is a real fun visual and it gets real fun and exciting to read. But pairing that back kind of with the humanity of LCD. I think one thing that that stuck out to me from the very beginning that no one has ever done anything with is the idea that like she has a mature intelligence. Like they advanced her farther than a 5-year old, but she never comes across that way. Like she's really good at robotics.
Other than being a technical genius.
Yeah, she's got that one thing she's a genius at, but everything else emotionally and like awareness wise, she's still very much a child. So like they set it up to where I it would be interesting to see like her actually tapping into that intelligence, both smarts, but also like awareness and perception of an adult trapped in that body. Because I think that's a really interesting story that I don't think ever really got.
You want like a Kirsten Dunst Interview with a Vampire thing going
maybe
on.
Something like that, yeah. It never kind of really came out. It was like she's really good at one thing, specifically electronics, but nothing else gives me any indication that she is more advanced than like a 6, 7, 8-year-old girl. So
here's a story you'd hate. Mojo gets the two of them and gives them their own series, but he has LCD construct like a preteen body for herself. She's like now 12 or 13, but still using the baby talk and like figuring out what it means to grow up. And Albert's her dad. And there's like some weird like coming of age stories regarding these two. It gives almost like there's some really interesting potential there, actually, even though it makes me deeply uncomfortable. But the idea of aging this character up where Jubilee's not allowed to, it's got the Valeria Richards energy, right? Like she's stuck at one age and then suddenly she's a teen. There's some interesting like Small Wonders, if you guys remember that show from the
Small
80s.
Wonder, yeah.
Mojo casts them in a show. Oh my god, now I kind of want to write it.
See, no, I think you flip that to where yes, she has her preteen body and she's growing up, but Albert's not her dad. Albert's like her son or younger brother, because that's their dynamic, is Albert's the younger brother. So everyone assumes that Albert's the father, but she's in charge and she's helping him figure out life because he is the younger.
Oh, so it's more like a ruse, essentially, that they operate in the world.
And or it's the world's assumptions because of their visual dynamics and difference. They're like, is that your dad? He's like, no, it's my younger brother.
Oh, man.
Playing off of...
Say it in baby style.
No, it's my younger brother.
Playing off of the, like, Small Wonders trope, that would actually be a delight to write. Now I kind of want to do it.
Oh, man. I mean, honestly, I feel like that... I mean, like, yeah, like, that's, like you said, like, a side story in a Mojoverse feels like a good fit. You know?
Yeah, it's like the backup story in an annual, and we get some pastiche with these characters who are allowed to actually grow a little bit and have some experiences, you
and
know,
especially since the only limitation they really have is, you know, the nearest radio hut as far as what their bodies can be. If they're in a Mojoverse, you know, get Spiral's body shop and, you know, like there you go, you could build whatever body you want else.
And then Spiral is sent back in time and she's the one that founds Radio Hut, which is why the technology in the
Radio Hut is basically as good as Spiral's workshop.
Yep, there we go.
There's portals in the back of every radio hut to the body shop.
I do love the idea of like Spiral being like the next door like Wilson and like a tool time like home improvement, you know, just like over the fence giving like sage advice with arms sticking up above the fence.
Albert as a noir character is also really interesting too, right? Like there's a lot of these stories where they're on like some sort of secret mission to take something down, but they have the big reveal that they're the robots at the end. I actually think I think these characters I'm really fond of in a lot of ways. It's been fun to explore their history and their tropes and like sort out all the crazy. It dawns on me, I mean, every episode of my show is different ensembles, which I love, but when I do these Patreons, it takes me all over places. I'm not in like the Silver Age character conversations. I'm jumping into, you know, the plasma wraiths of Wolverine, or like it's fun to remind myself how much crazy is in the X-Men sometimes.
That's your next cosplay, is full plasma wraith.
It's
outfit.
Just straight latex in bondage, man. Yep.
Yeah, nope, I don't think so. I have one cosplay and I already feel like it's too snug. It'll be another for a year. I love the two of you so much. It's lovely to see you. Can't wait to hang out again soon. We're gonna put this out on the Patreon on October 23rd. So as we're wrapping up, Any final thoughts? Where can people find you online? Anything you would like to plug? Let's go, Philip, and then Christy.
Sure. At this point, the four-issue part, Beast Story and X-Men From the Ashes Infinity will be out. That's issues 15, 16, 17, and 18, written by Alex Pacnadel.
I love Alex's ability to like figure out like what kind of story do I need to tell? And then let's find a parallel for it. Like this blank slate character is so interesting. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm very much enjoying it. It was great to draw. Michael Bartolo did the colors and just absolutely knocked it out of the park. By this point, I don't know if my next series will be announced, but it will be X-Men Infinity related, so just keep your eyes out for that. Probably will be, but I don't want to say just in case. But yeah, that's where I'm at. On Twitter at Philip CV occasionally, but mainly on Instagram at Philip CV Comic Art is where you can track me down.
Excellent. And Christy?
Yeah, I'm Christy Porter. You can find me on pretty much all of the socials at Porter Geeks Out. I have a story in another queer anthology, because apparently that's where I live, comic book called When I Was Young, that is out in the world. I wrote a really fun magical girl kind of inspired story in that with artist Morgan Bean. And other than that, I am the managing editor at Salt Lake Magazine, so you can always find my work there as well.
Tell the kids hello. It's great to see you both. Lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. I keep my own social media private because I got kiddos, but you can follow the show graymalkin_lane on Instagram. The final Patreon for Halloween coming out next week after this one is going to be the character Master Pandemonium, who is nuts. He's crazy. Sarah Century and Alex Segura are joining me for that. Out on the main show, we are going to be hitting Incredible Hulk 180 right after this. Thanks everybody for listening. Thank you so much for the ongoing support. Thank you, Philip. Thank you, Christy. We'll see you all back here next time on the Grey Malkin Lane Patreon channel.